yesterday morning, and what a week it was. Sam Rachofsky here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. We have a lot of ground to cover, friends. So let me get right to it. There are, of course, some big things. First of all, Trump igniting a trade war. We've got that going on. Google, YouTube. Have you seen these? It's an interesting question, right? Corporate censorship. There's some interplay there, of course, with gun control and things that these businesses are doing, these companies like Dick's Sporting Goods. And so there's a talk of what government can do versus what private enterprise can do. And I want to get into that a little bit. The gun control debate, of course, still alive and well. The White House. Well, let's talk about that here. Hope Hicks is gone, right? She's the babe that was Trump's longest serving communications director. She took over for Scaramucci after his extremely brief tenure. I think she outlasted the previous three communications directors, the sum of all of their time on the job by 4 days. And there's a lot of talk about why she left. She's very private and tight-lipped. We're probably not going to know what the real story is unless she takes a book deal. She may eventually talk. But as of right now, I don't think any speculation is really good. But I have a theory on it. And the theory actually is not rosy when it comes to the Trump administration. It has to do with resistance. And I bring this up because you're seeing the effects of an aggressive investigation into the campaign, into the Trump presidency, take effect on key people. No person, how old is she? 29? No person in their 20s, 30s, with a bright, promising career ahead of them, want to be dragged through the dirt and moreover, do not want to face any form of legal jeopardy. And so when she was hauled in front of the House Intelligence Committee and testified for 9 hours, do you have any idea what that consists of? 9 hours of testimony. It's a lot of talk time. And presumably when she was testifying, the Republican side of the House Intelligence Committee, that's chaired by Nunes, right? California Republican. I'm assuming they were pretty soft on her. But then Schiff and co, the Democrats on the committee, I am sure took her to task. And it was all behind closed doors. We don't know what happened. One of the things that leaked right afterwards was that she had said that she told white lies on behalf of the president and that Trump lost his mind on her when he found out when she returned back to the White House and reported that she had said this. To her interrogators, Trump lost his mind. And that got a lot of play, right? See, the president, she lied for the president. She's carrying water for the president. This is criminal. See, there's collusion. I mean, and people are already writing Trump's obituary all over again. Little aside here, I am fairly certain that if you are a White House communications director, your job is to tell white lies on behalf of the president. Find me an administration where the press department is telling the truth. That right there, folks, is a unicorn in the wild. So that, that didn't happen. That's not the issue. Because the important part of the story that we don't know was, were these white lies under oath? If they were white lies told to the FBI, that's a problem. If it's in violation of the relevant statutes. But if it's under oath, it's a problem. If she's telling white lies to the Washington Post, I know journalists think very highly of themselves. And probably if journalists had their way, there would be some federal law in the books that would make it very illegal and unlawful. Big penalty to lie to any journalist. But this is not how it works. And you know this. So I don't know if Trump raided her. I don't know if that was a problem. I suspect that at the back of this is one of the underlying reasons for her to go, I've had it, is 9 hours of sworn testimony. She leaves it. Her head is spinning. Her lawyer probably is saying, well, that was a problem. That was a problem. You know, really shouldn't have said that. I see what they're going for over here. And now there's this Mueller probe. And the Mueller probe, by the way, still there's nothing about Russia collusion. Zero. Any of the indictments so far that we've gotten, have any of them had even a whiff of collusive activity? No. But they are all for associated, well, not even associated, but just other crimes that have been discovered as part of that investigation. It's very important to know that, you know, that she, well, she knows people, right? She's interacted, was with the campaign from roughly the very beginning. So she's seen that just this, what was it, Monday, Tuesday? When did the new Mueller indictments against Manafort and Gates come out? It was very early this week. Those come down. Then she testifies. Then Trump berates her. And I can see it. I get it. Hey, I'm out. Now, my job here, I analyze and I give you my, you know, I give you some perspective. I wasn't in the room. I'm not inside of her head. She's an interesting person. You know, she certainly a youngest person to ever hold the job, very poised, but we don't really know much about her. She didn't speak publicly very much. And honestly, the job may well have been overwhelming for her. She got her start as a Ralph Lauren model. Did you know this? But she's a smart girl. She, you know, great education. And then what happened was, part of being the model when she was a kid, a minor, she ended up kind of getting a job with Ivanka Trump. I don't know if you know, this is how she got to the White House. She got a job working for Ivanka's fashion line, and that put her in Trump Tower. And all the way back in 2015, Trump calls her in one day and says, you know, I think that this election coming up is an outsider's campaign. I think that this election coming up is one for the taking for an outsider. And he is referring to himself, but he says to her in his pitch to work on the campaign. And that's how early this goes, right? All the way back to 2015. Part of his pitch was, and this is very interesting, he goes, in order for me to be successful as an outsider, I need to surround myself with outsiders. I don't need Beltway political types to play the same tired plays, to use the same overused, exhausted playbook. I need regular people who are smart, who've lived in the world, who have friends outside of the Washington, D.C. bubble, or the political bubble, at any rate, to be here and to help guide me. And the loss of a close confidant, I'll add this to the mix, is always a problem. This is why very rarely are presidencies more successful in their second term. Because by the time, when if you have a two-term presidency, by the time the second term rolls around, there are a number of people who bail, and they don't bail because they hate the president. They don't bail because, you know, they've been wronged or there's a Mueller investigation. They're just tired. The hours of work, people don't understand what it is like to work inside the White House. You don't go to sleep some nights. You might go home to shower and shave, and then you're back again at 6:30 a.m. And housing's expensive, so you're across town. I mean, it's not easy. And so people leave. The point is people leave after 4 years because that's a decorous time to leave. Oh, well, we're here for the first term. And now the people that replace those first-generation loyalists are in awe with the president, right? The president has been the president for however many, 4 years, right? They're God. I mean, not God, but you get the point. And these people are less likely to tell truth to power. And one of the most important things, whether you are, a world leader, a politician, right, an executive at a company, or you're, any leadership position, it's very easy to get caught up in your own nonsense, in your own BS. You need to have people around you. They'll smack you around. Say, hey, don't do that. That didn't, no, Sam, that didn't work. That wasn't good. And from everything that I've read and what people tell me, Hope Hicks was that kind of person. I mean, she was somebody who was able to check Trump and give him, you know, give him really honest feedback. Feedback, by the way, that he would take. So I'm and I don't want to get too TMZ on this, but I think that, of course, the relationship deal probably had something to do with it, too. Right. You remember Rod Porter? He's the secretary, the presidential assistant who's working inside the White House. He had 3 weeks ago or so, both of his ex-wives come out and said, yeah, he was a serial abuser. Pictures get published in the Daily Mail and in the Washington Post of these women with black eyes. And it's not good. It's not good. And she's dating him, right? They're hot and heavy. They're in a relationship. And so he is forced to resign. He leaves the White House. I believe they broke up. Hey, I mean, when you're a 29-year-old woman and you're dating a great guy, and for whatever reason it goes south, I know a lot of people who at the next sign of stress, at the next juncture where more stuff gets piled on, that's when they bounce. So I'm giving you the assessment of why I think Hope Hicks left. But the most important takeaway from that, the most important thing to put into your minds, is that I think she's gone in part. I think she would still be there if there were no special counsel. If Mueller was not doing his investigation of the Trump White House and unnerving everybody there, especially the old timers, right? The ones that were around for the campaign, because Mueller's going to be pretty disappointed, right? If this thing winds up and he hasn't found any collusion. So Mueller's got a two-pronged purpose. First prong is the big picture. Find Russia collusion. The second prong is almost worse. While me and my expensive team of 33 attorneys or however many they have, while our team is busy looking for collusion, we can't just be perceived by the public as twiddling our thumbs and doing nothing. We've got to, every few weeks, throw out an indictment. Here, indict that person, indict this person. And they're all low-level people. This is tremendously unnerving. If you are a low-level person and you had a bagel somewhere in New York City, you know, in Manhattan, around the block from Trump Tower, you went out with someone that may or may not be a Russian. You had a bagel, a nice little schmear. Somebody asked you, any contacts with Russians? No, I don't remember. And all of a sudden, there it comes, blast from the past. A meeting, or whatever. Somebody recorded it. Somebody was there, says you were there. And now you're lying to the FBI, and bam, it's a felony. This is really, I cannot overemphasize this, it's unnerving. And so back to what I opened the program with here just minutes ago. This is the ultimate resistance. When the libs talked about resisting Trump, this was it. The entire thing, right? The entire purpose of this Trump-Russia nonsense was to throw Trump's presidency, his internal machinery, right? His back office into disarray. Have people so worried about being indicted that they either want to leave or are essentially cowed, if that's the right word, into inaction. I mean, if you're sitting around all day thinking, when's Mueller going to call me? And oh my gosh, that one thing I told that one FBI investigator that I spoke to 4 months ago, I wonder when that's going to come and bite me in the butt. You are wasting precious, real estate in your head, worrying about that, and you're not doing the job. You're not advancing the president's agenda. So in that sense, Democrats have made it's a brilliant move. Now, where it gets less brilliant is as they continue to find no collusion and nothing comes up. The obvious pitfall is there seems to be a tremendous amount of collusion between Hillary and the Russians. And there seems to be a tremendous amount of collusion between the FBI, who are at best anti-Trump, at worst Hillary loyalists, who were blatantly breaking the law. And that's what the the investigator general of the FBI right now is coming out. The report, haven't seen the report yet. It's going to drop any day now. But apparently, supposedly, the scuttlebutt is that the report's going to say that Peter Strzok disregarded black letter FBI policy to do what he did. And all this stuff is going to blow up on them. So what they thought was going to be an easy setup on Trump is not going to turn out that way. But it can, as illustrated by Hope Hicks' departure, it can create problems for the Trump White House. So we got some clips about this. Kenneth Starr. He's opining about this. He's the prosecutor himself, who special prosecutor went after Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, if you remember. So don't go anywhere. Brief break, and we're back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, and Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation. Okay, Ken Starr, the lawyer, prosecutor, a special prosecutor who was assigned to the Whitewater investigation. That's right, Whitewater. It wasn't Monica Lewinsky. Ken Starr was not appointed back, what year was that, 95, 96? He was not appointed to investigate Monica Lewinsky. Nobody knew, well, nobody outside of the White House had any inkling of who Monica Lewinsky was. She was a nobody. What happened is the Clintons have been shady since, the time they left the womb, practically. So they had this real estate company, the name Whitewater, down in Arkansas, and they got rich. They made some money. Investors got burned. There were problems. And in all of that, the Republicans, demanded a special prosecutor be appointed. They caved, appointed Ken Starr. Ken Starr comes in and begins researching. And really, I think he ended up getting, again, collateral indictments, indictments of collateral people that associates of the Clintons, but never really got anywhere with Bill or Hillary on the Whitewater deal. But they did. I'll tell you what happened. They did. He ended up, Linda Tripp, the story, and they contacted. And all of a sudden, what did we have? Clinton lied under oath. Bam. Felony. Because I lied about, there was a different matter with Paula Jones, right? That her sexual harassment lawsuit. What a mess, man. What a dirty year. And yeah, and Trump is the guy. Trump's the womanizer and the crazy guy. Hell's bells. We've forgotten what the 8 years of Bill Clinton were like, and we got over it. Everybody was fine. He's a great president. The economy's doing great. Who cares what he's doing in the Oval Office, with that thing. Anyway, so this is the setup. Ken Starr here is talking on Fox and Friends. This is Tuesday of this week. No evidence of collusion. Listen very carefully to this, and he's absolutely correct on every point that he makes.
We've seen no evidence of collusion, which is what the Mueller investigation is to be all about. And I think there's a lot of symbolism in the fact that Rod Rosenstein briefed the president on the indictment from Friday a week ago, mm-hmm. indicting the 13 Russian individuals and the three companies. That is very significant. And again, not a word in that almost 40-page indictment about collusion. Nothing whatsoever.
Not a thing whatsoever. So they write 40 pages. Rod Rosenstein, who is the acting attorney general as it relates to Russia, they do a 40-page write-up. And this guy, by the way, he's the guy who appointed Mueller. So it's not exact. Yeah, he's in the Trump Justice Department, but I think it's fairly well established that Trump does not have a meaningful command of his Justice Department. So and nothing. There's nothing there. Absolute madness. Well, I well, this all of this story with Hope Hicks leaving and with this report dropping, even though it didn't say anything, with all this going on, there's renewed noise again that the wheels are coming off the Trump presidency. For example, Carl Bernstein of Watergate fame said this on Anderson Cooper on Wednesday.
I think what's going on now, there are two stories that are coming together. There's the Mueller investigation. There's the Russian story and the possibility of collusion and the possibility of obstruction of justice. But there is now a subtext that people in the White House will say to you, it is unclear to them whether Donald Trump can effectively govern, whether he's capable of it in terms of his own abilities, conduct, and whether or not things have gotten to the point where the wheels are coming off of this presidency.
Yeah. And then he adds, well, we don't know that, but certainly people in the White House are open with each other and with journalists raising these kinds of questions. So again, we're back to unnamed sources. We're back to, you know, little rumors in the hallway. These reporters are hoovering up. And I'm going to tell you this. People want to believe what they believe, and these journalists that go into the Trump White, and they all hate Trump, right? This is to them. All the things that we like, all the points on his agenda that he's accomplishing that make him the president that we will reelect in 3 years. All those things are horrendous to them. So they're looking for signs that and how many times have we heard this before? Oh, the wheels were coming up. Oh, the wheels were coming up. Another person left. And then guess what? The man still manages to push the thing forward. So I think that's significant. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, your dutiful host, manning the desk of truth, and taking you, really guiding you through this maze of total BS. Yeah, I know we're not on the radio, but doesn't mean that I am going to start using bad language. It's funny because that's one of the first things people asked me or commented. They said, well, now that you're doing a podcast, you can use the four words, you know, you can use them. And I thought, no, first of all, my kids listen to this program, and even though they hear me using those words and more at home, I don't think we need to validate it by having it play on the MP3 player in the car. So no. And the other part of this is sometimes, well, what radio, what censorship? Yeah, what censorship rules on the radio require you to do is sometimes be a little bit creative. For example, you know, if you follow the program, you know that we don't say the word, the alternative word for donkey and derriere. If you're a francophone, we say a money money. And in my view as a radio guy, my view is that this is fun. I'm not a big, a satellite's a weird deal to me. I never have it in any of my cars. You know, the XM stuff. I've never really gotten into it. My understanding, though, and I'm not a big, I'm going to mention the show. I'll mention the show. But Howard Stern. I'm not a big Howard Stern fan. I never really listened to much of his programming. But I know one thing. When he was on the radio, a lot of his off-color humor had to be subtle. It had to be... What's the word? There had to be entendre, you know, little play with words, you know, they couldn't say certain things, so they danced around it. And in a way, that was really what made the show, I think, entertaining. Well, fast forward to, you know, him being one of the most prominent talk show hosts to leave terrestrial radio in favor of satellite, of XM. And Now, all of a sudden, he just bad words, you know, and they're saying horrible things. And it's kind of cringeworthy. I think I was in Texas when we were picking up the puppies, and I was cruising somewhere listening to a replay. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. You can't push the edge when there's no edge. Yeah, you have to have, exactly. So you kind of end up without any rails to follow. It's just my opinion. If you know my email, sam@samnation.com. You can tell me what you think. speaking of things to do when you can't say something. Oh, you know how if a turtle gets attacked. I'm assuming this is why they have their shells. They withdraw, you know, they put their little legs in, put their head in, and then the bigger animal with the sharp teeth, you know, can't get to them. Well, this is exactly what happened on live television in Australia. They have a Today Show down there too. The host is a Ben Fordham. This was on Sunday. And, well, you know Michael Wolff, right? The trash-peddling author of his tell-all Trump book. And he's, but this thing is starting to leak. I mean, it's, everything there is made up or blown out of proportion or whatnot. So he's, Fordham, the host of Australia's Today Show, he's challenging him on the assertion that the president was having an affair while the president was already in the White House, while Trump's already right under Melania's nose doing this, whoever. And I think actually, funny thing enough, I was talking about Hope Hicks earlier. There was some allusion that it was maybe her. I don't know. Regardless, if you missed this, I'm going to play it. Oh, Nikki Haley. That's right. It was. See, I don't like getting into all this tawdry stuff, but it's. But this is what I'm saying. Michael Wolff presents him as a serious journalist, as someone who's done his research. And then the minute it gets put under the microscope, well, I'll play it for you when we come back from the break, because you got to listen to this. This is classic stuff. Sam Rzhosky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rzhosky, Sam Nation. Okay, Michael Wolff on Australia's Today Show. This was on Sunday of this week, which seems honestly like an eternity ago. Listen to this exchange. Fordham, it starts with Fordham talking, the host talking. You can see where it's going. It's taking a sharp turn. They talked about other things about Trump in the book, and then it goes to this.
You said during a TV interview just last month that you are absolutely sure that Donald Trump is currently having an affair while president behind the back of the First Lady. And I repeat, you said you were absolutely sure. Last week, however, you backflipped and said, I quote, I do not know if the president is having an affair. Do you owe the president and the First Lady an apology, Mr. Wolff?
I can't hear you.
Just last month, you said you were absolutely sure that the president was having an affair. And now you say
I'm not getting anything.
You're not hearing me, Mr. Wolff.
I'm not getting anything.
We were hearing each other well just before. You're not hearing me, Mr. Wolff?
Do you hear? I'm not.
Mr. Wolff was hearing me before, but he's not hearing me anymore. So
I'm not hearing anything.
The interview may be over.
Yeah, the interview might be over. And it was. And he literally, as the host says, the interview might be over. You see Wolff start to take his earpiece out and he's acting all confused. Total nonsense, right? The people in the other studio where Wolff was not, he wasn't in his house. He wasn't on the phone. He was in an affiliate studio somewhere else in the world. And so the TV station had its own staff there, right? I mean, it was all part, they're all part of the same parent company. So these are, fellow employees. And so they were able to verify the guy that was standing next to him, the producer, who's standing next to the guy getting interviewed, Michael Wolff, the author, says, yeah, I could hear you really loudly. He took his earpiece out and I could hear you talking in the earpiece. What this was, my friends, is a turtle maneuver. The animal with the sharp teeth came out, specifically a real journalist named Ben Fordham, and starts asking him about this. Look, you said this, and now you've backed away from it. Do you owe them an apology? And I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Reagan did this. This was Reagan's classic move, but he had advanced age to hide behind. But Reagan would do this. He reporters would walk by and ask, Mr. President, we need to know, is there any truth to the Contras, arming? I'm sorry. What was that? I can't hear you. Put his hand up to his ear. But I think he hammed it up. I mean, it was but this guy is such a weasel. And right. What is this reminiscent of? This guy got literally ripped a new one on Morning Joe. Joe Scarborough, Mika Brzezinski put him on the ham slicer and just started shaving off little prosciutto slices of this guy, one after the other. I'm no question, this is unbelievable stuff. So I'm gonna tell you, this is, and these are people. Wasn't he celebrated? Remember, for 2 weeks, everybody went around and the consensus in the blabberati, mass media, everybody said, this guy, he did his homework. You cannot challenge this kind of intrepid journalism. And we here on Sam Nation said it was nonsense right from the beginning. I said this doesn't add up. It reads like a trashy dime store novel. Moreover, I did my research on the guy and I told you. And you listened. And you told your friends. And now you sound smart because you follow the program. But at any rate, I told you what he did. He has a history of this. This is his MO. And guess what? It's smart. He made a ton of money. He is a guy. He's not a serious journalist. He cares more about money. But listen, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't fault him for it. I like money, too. But you and I can't trust him and his credibility, right? We can't. You got to put it into perspective and understand what people's motivations are. All right. Yeah, I'm going to get to trade tariffs. I want to talk about this. I want to talk about this YouTube thing because this is interesting. Guns, immigration, too. There's too much to talk about. All right, Sam Rachofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rachofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rachofsky, Sam Nation, here talking about everything that's been going on this week. This is your weekly roundup in a just a little bit of investment of time, and I will get you right up to speed. Have you seen this news that Dianne Feinstein went all the way down to San Diego, which, by the way, for a San Francisco liberal, that's a trek. I mean, I like San Diego. Less homeless poo in San Diego than San Francisco. So you have that going for you down there. Also, the weather's a lot better. But I think that for most people up in NorCal, do you think this is true, by the way, that most people in NorCal sort of have a superiority complex over us here in Southern California? I get this feeling when I'm in San Francisco and I'm talking to people, I say, I'm from Orange County, and they look at me like I fell off the turnip truck. Go, who is this rube? And I say, well, it's good I don't have to wear galoshes or to walk from my office to my car. But anyway, San Fran. Yeah, okay, I know. But it's not Modesto. People in Modesto aren't saying Orange County. San Francisco, correct. Yeah, I get that. And the surrounding, you know, up-and-coming neighborhood. So Feinstein went all the way down to San Diego for what? To get slapped in the face. Did you hear about this? Well, she went down to get her party's endorsement. San Diego was briefly taken over by fanatics. Because that's what they are. I mean, if you think of who are the party activists of the Democratic Party of the state of California, let me put it in different terms. Who are the craziest of the craziest of the crazies? Yeah, those people. So I'm guessing there were some really bad body odors. I'm guessing that parking lot was filled with Priuses. And we had the little game of guess the gender, right? It's like pin the tail on a donkey, only the tail is removable and you have to have a surgeon to do it. Anyway, so that is what it was like at the Democratic Party convention down there. And they didn't give Feinstein the nomination. And why? It's very simple. Feinstein, in their view, is not liberal enough. Now, she probably... probably is one of the more respected Democrats in Congress. Occasionally Feinstein actually is reasonable. I'm going to get into hot water with some of you. I get this. Now, Barbara Boxer was indefensible. She was a nut. Horrible. But Feinstein occasionally, she's capable of doing actually advancing some portions of conservative agenda over the years. And I like that she's tough on national security, right? So it's a mixed bag. But the point is that she's not kooky enough for Californians. So they want her out of here. They want her gone. And the truth is she'll get reelected because all this means is that she goes into the general election without the Democratic Party's seal of approval. And in my view, I actually think this helps her. Why? Oh, well, because, we don't have we have the open primary. We have an open primary, and we may end up with two Democrats on the ticket. It might be her and Kevin DeLeon, who's nut. Well, I could see, I know many Republicans, including me. I probably, if I'm facing her and Kevin DeLeon on the ticket, I'm going to vote for her. It's not because I love Dianne Feinstein. It's just, I don't know. I have critical thinking skills. Call me crazy. So this is all good. But this all ties into the broader climate right now for Democrats in the country. And it matters. It matters because all the prognosticators, all these, wise Nostradamus types that want to predict what's going to happen in 2018, I think a lot of them have this wrong. They do not understand what is going on out there in the country, even here in California. Don't go anywhere. Brief timeout. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, as an added spot tonight, I just wanted to let you guys know that we are subjugating our entire show to Sam Nation because apparently he's right and the rest of everyone is wrong.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation live. No, we're not live, but we are sort of live. We're live on your MP3 player, your iPhone, your car radio, whatever it is, whatever device you are using to pull this brilliance off the internet. Here I am at your service. Just talking about Feinstein earlier, I have a little point to make here. I read a piece in The Hill. Yeah, The Hill is usually fairly measured. And anyway, the article cites, it's from Wednesday, and the article cites a lot of Democratic Party activists to talk about the energy on the left, right? You got a lot of energy and a lot of, there's a key phrase here, young energy. The left right now senses that its moment is coming because all of these millennials are going to, you know, are so fed up with Trump and want change. And in some respects, there's a generational shift that's occurring in these candidates, right? Like Feinstein, who's, 86 going on 150, it's their time. Time's up, you know? I mean, we can't be ageist, right? We can't be ageist. We're not discriminating. We're not being sexist. We're just saying, you're old. Diane, time to go. It's perplexing mixed messaging. It gets very complicated when you're a liberal. It's like crossing, the Ghostbusters, but they're crossing their streams. You got one stream of political correctness going one way and another stream going the other way. But don't let them cross because the time paradox will happen and blow up or whatever it is. Oh, so much easier being a conservative. You just say what's on your mind and have everybody hate you. Okay. Feinstein. Who won California? We had a candidate that was transcendent, right? We had this Bernie Sanders. I understand he was an old guy. I get that. But he was the chosen candidate of the youths. The youths. The problem, my fair Democrats, with today's youths is that they're useless. I actually could create a word like youthless. I mean, they're terrible. They don't show up to work. They think everything comes, and I'm not going to say the only, but I would say if you're looking at conservative young people and liberal young people, it's the conservative ones that have jobs and have been disciplined as children by their parents and told no on occasion. So those are the ones that are going to show up at the polls, right? At the end of the day to vote, you got to register. You got to go fill out a piece of paper, mail it and get a ballot and fill it out, mail it in, or do it the old fashioned way. You go and you stand in a line. You got to find the polling place, got to stand in a line and take time away from, I don't know, playing some video game. So anyway, this is the problem with placing too high of an emphasis on the youth vote. The youth vote is notoriously unreliable and more so for the left. And so my point as far as Feinstein being in trouble, and I mentioned earlier that she'd lost the Democratic Party nomination, was beat out. She got only 37%. That's nothing. But these are the radicals within the party. And they all wanted the people, journalists went out and talked to them. What do you guys want? We want youth. We want vigor. We want more left. We want Kevin De Leon, right? He's the one who got the most votes. And he's the leader of the California Senate. Great resume, by the way. Jolly well done, Kevin. You really have a fine resume there. You know, you've done such a bang-up job in California. I think what I want to do is send you straight to Washington, D.C. Let's do this. Dummies. Jeez, the left is so stupid. It's unbelievable. Okay, so again, if California was really, and this is, when was the election with Hillary? This is, I'm talking a year ago, year, 4 months ago. It's not an eternity. And Bernie lost here. And so I don't, and more importantly, I'm going to again reiterate this point, with an open primary, you're going to end up with two Democrats on the ticket. And I don't think that the crazier one wins. I think that you still have enough conservatives in the state that band with we'll call it half of the, if all Republicans or most Republicans vote for her, and then half of the Democrats vote for her, she's in, she's done. Doesn't need the party. But this explains some TV that happened this week that has gotten a lot of attention. And that was, I don't know if you noticed this, maybe you missed it, but I was paying attention, so you would get the download. There was a meeting on Capitol, no, in the White House, between Trump and a number of senators, and they were talking about gun control. And the big thing that came out of the meeting was, see, Trump, he's okay with gun, he's okay, he's willing to consider some radical changes to the Second Amendment. Trump can't do anything. I mean, he's meaningless. He's got to have Congress. Congress has to fix the law. The way I interpreted the meeting, though, because the critical part of the meeting was him and Feinstein were sitting next to each other. And it happened after this vote. And so it was the vote happened. Feinstein's, in, you know, supposedly in political peril, although I don't place a lot of stock in that. And next thing you know, she's sitting with Trump and she's all smiles. And she's all smiles because Trump is giving her what she wants. Now, the Breitbart wing of the pro-Trump Republican movement, whatever you want to call it, the militant Trumpists interpreted this as an enormous a danger sign that Trump was look he's abandoned. Oh my gosh, I thought he was a Second Amendment guy. Ah! And this I perceived it very strongly through my network, at least, and certainly what I was seeing in the media, people panicking that Trump was really going to sell them out on guns. And it prompted, it was so dramatic, it prompted a response from Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders. In fact, very quickly, some cold water got poured on this, and I'll play that. I have got a clip to sum that up here. I may play it in a minute, but I want to get to what the point is. Before I get too lost in all these fun details. The point of this, okay? You know, Feinstein needs those Republicans in California to win. The California Republicans are not militant Second Amendment people. Trump is smart. The people that say Trump is dumb, he's not. No, that's a non-starter. You may disagree with him, but he's not. He understands how to play the game. And I think what we saw was a little assist for Dianne Feinstein, a little pat on the back and let's play along. And so she can go back and say, you know, I was able to even talk to the evil Trump and get him to see things a little bit from my perspective. And I think that can sell. That will sell maybe not with the student population at Berkeley, but it's going to sell with, you know, the 40, 50, 60-year-olds out there who are, you know, working jobs and are, you know, left-leaning Democrats, but not radicals. And they'll say, hey, you know what? That's good. You know, she actually has these are people who like the word bipartisanship, right? She actually has bipartisanship because we know what the word means, right? You know the definition. On this program, bipartisanship is Democrats getting Republicans to do what they want. And that's exactly it. Feinstein on TV getting chuckles with Trump and kind of persuading him maybe to see things through her eyes on gun control is bipartisanship in the classic Sam Nation definition. So what I'm getting at here is it is what it is. Political theater, nothing more. So Jonathan Carl and George Stephanopoulos, they were getting very excited yesterday morning on ABC about gun control. And then Jonathan Carl asks about where does the president stand on this? You know, they made mention of the Feinstein exchange. Listen to this.
So where does the president stand right now? Well, I just a few moments ago spoke with Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the press secretary. She suggested that perhaps he doesn't support universal background checks, just supporting the background check system. That would be a change from what he said earlier this week. And as for raising the age for the purchase of assault weapons, she said the president still supports that conceptually, but thinks it might be a better issue handled by the states. That is a change, too.
And John, as you know, if the president is not clear, is not leading with a clear package, unlikely that anything's going to get through this Congress.
No way any of it happens unless he forces it through. And even with his support, that's an open question whether or not it will pass.
That's it. Exactly. I can't even believe it. I'm saying ABC News is getting it 100% right. That exchange on TV where Trump appears to be for gun control. It essentially doesn't matter. This entire bit of any changes, any restrictions placed on the Second Amendment, which is what gun control is, any legislative modification to the Constitution has to be done by legislators, not by the president. So it's going to come down to Congress, and Congress, I don't know. I think there are some reasonable things, and I think background checks and tightening that up is hugely important. I don't want to have nuts you know, nutty people be able to buy guns. But you see, you have some competing interests here. And this has to be said because, well, okay, everybody sees what happened in Parkland in Florida. It was a horrible shooting on Valentine's Day. And they say, how could it be that this troubled man who had, there were so many flags, they were all missed. How could it be that he can walk in and pass a background check? And the problem is that if you take guns and death and shooting and young kids having their lives extinguished and their innocence taken away, put all that aside. Now let's talk about patient privacy. See, in a vacuum, I say patient privacy. I say maintaining private health records. And by the way, statistically, it's a very popular issue with people. Nobody says, put my health records up on the internet. Absolutely. Attach my social security number to it. Absolutely. Open book. Right? I mean, who do you know that would say that? And no, I understand that. It's not that. That's an extreme position. But I'm having fun with you, so don't get all mad at me. That's an extreme position. But what are the shades of gray to that? At what point is a government agent able to access your very sensitive health records? And at what point, for example, there are stories right now. There's a posse. They've deputized a few posses, the California DOJ here in California, to go around the state and collect guns from people who are no longer eligible to own them. And the mystery is at what point do you say that someone is not eligible to have their constitutional right? And what we know is, and what the courts have established, is to take away a constitutional right, there has to be a proceeding. There has to be a legal proceeding. And what if somebody owns guns and senses that they maybe need to talk to somebody because, you know, they're having repeated dreams of Hillary Clinton. I don't know, something really horrifying. And they go and see their shrink and bing, it triggers something in the computer system and bang, a flag goes up. And next thing you know, the agents show up and say, sir, we need to, sorry, you're having dreams about Hillary and Huma. But I, you know, we're here to take your guns because we think, you know, this is now on our radar and you're not fit. Well, things like that are going to happen. I mean, things like that are going to happen. And so it's not as easy as a bunch of children. And pardon me, this is part of this debate now. The whole gun control argument has been turned over to the victims, right? And you've got this commentator, this hero kid, David Hogg, 17 years old. I don't care how brilliant you are. You know nothing at 17. You don't. But he's a smart kid, and he has a status as a victim to speak about the issue. And we'll talk a little more about him here next segment. But you've got these people out there saying, do something, just get it done now. We're going to, you know, you hear, we're going to walk out of school. We're done. You can't protect us. These kids are saying to the legislators, we're walking out. And my only point here is it's not a simple issue. There is no quick fix. The quickest fix, if I ran a school, I mentioned this last week, is to barricade the hell out of the school. One point of entry and have that point of entry guarded. And period. The end of story. It'll prevent most, if not all, of these incidents from ever happening at that campus. But as far as a legislative solution, because you have vested constitutional rights that are not easy to eradicate, even if you think that gun control is absolutely the right thing to do, I also know that you believe in, if you're a liberal and you don't like guns, you believe in other civil liberties. You give money to the ACLU and causes like that. Because why? Because you pay for, one of the things is patient privacy, right? Big supported issue by the ACLU. Okay, don't go anywhere. More on this when we come back. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, here we go. So continuing the conversation about guns, part of the problem here, but people that are screaming for the solution don't understand that there are constitutionally vested rights that people who don't know anything about the Constitution are trying to dispose of arbitrarily. I'll give you an example. Congress right now could get together. Somebody, you know, with a laser beam from outer space could implement mind control and get every senator and every congressman to think the same. And they could pass the most whatever. If you love gun, if you want to get rid of guns, whatever the most draconian solution is, or divided by two, half of that, even just half of a draconian solution could pass it. It's not going to fly in the Supreme Court. It will get it. There will be a challenge to it immediately as soon as somebody is affected by it. They're going to hire the best lawyers, and those lawyers are all paid for, by the way, by foundations, including the NRA. So we're going to find a plaintiff. It's going to be very well funded, and it'll go to the Supreme Court, and that law is going to be unconstitutional. And the reason people are still shouting, we got to do something, we got to do something, like one of those monkey wind-up toys where the little monkey has the symbols and just... You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, Ari Melber, MSNBC, this is The Beat on Monday. And Melber is, this is how stupid commentators on TV are. And I don't know, I don't think he's an attorney. He can't possibly be a lawyer and make a dumb statement like this. Listen to what he says.
The Second Amendment does not apply to AR-15s. It does not apply to assault style weapons. It never has. Congress may legally ban those weapons without touching the Second Amendment. That's a legal fact. But it's hard for many politicians to defend AR-15s. It's hard to explain why, as a policy trade-off, it's more important to make it easy to buy AR-15s and to restrict their use as weapons of mass murder. So politicians talk more about the Second Amendment than these weapons.
Oh, I just remind... So Melber, this guy actually won an Emmy. He's a legal analyst. He won an Emmy for his Supreme Court coverage. He's in fantasy land. Literally, this guy, and let me tell you why. So his point, if you didn't catch it, his point is that at the time the Constitution was written, and when the Bill of Rights, more importantly, the Bill of Rights was ratified, stapled to the main part of the Constitution and therefore bound to it, right? I'm joking. Didn't work that way. But anyway, at the time the Bill of Rights came around, they had muskets and they had, you know, flintlock guns. And so that's what the founding fathers intended, because it doesn't apply to AR-15s, because the AR-15 wasn't around at the time of the Bill of Rights getting drafted. Okay, I got a question for you. But hear me out. This is basic. That's basic kind of law, legal theory here. I'm going to ask you, at the time the Bill of Rights was ratified, let me ask you, did we have smartphones? Were there smartphones? No, excuse me, there weren't. Well, obviously, I mean, that's the point. But still, the Fourth Amendment prevents the government from... unlawful search and seizure, it prevents the government from snooping in your phone. And this is, by the way, again, this is where the left really loses me, because I'm a constitutionalist. Like, I like to bring it back to the Constitution. And I generally evaluate the Constitution the way the courts do, which is I want to give more liberty to people rather than less. I'm a pro-liberty person when it comes to analyzing constitutional rights. So, and by the way, this is absolutely true. I mean, the Fourth Amendment has repeatedly, again and again, been used to apply to modern forms of communication. They didn't have phones back then. They didn't have smartphones. They didn't have computers, laptops, et cetera, et cetera. That is, you know what they say in the Constitution, by the way, Fourth Amendment? It's search and seizure of your papers and things. Papers. Oh, it says paper. My gosh. Okay, but we can look into your laptop. Of course not. And so in 2008, the Supreme Court actually ruled on this very issue, which Ari doesn't even know, apparently, in Heller versus D.C. And they said exactly what I'm saying. Just as the First Amendment protects modern forms of communication and the Fourth Amendment applies to modern forms of search, the Second Amendment extends prima facie to all instruments that constitute bearable arms. That's the ruling. MSNBC, what a joke. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say, this was their finest hour.
Yeah, you know, the other thing is this whole angst toward the AR-15, the poor, innocent AR-15 that is getting tarred and feathered out there in the media. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, was just going through this terrible legal reasoning of Ari Melber. MSNBC talking about the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment doesn't apply to AR-15s because AR-15s weren't around at the time the Second Amendment was written. Nonsense. And it has been declared so by the Supreme Court back in 2008. Anyway, I have an idea. What if we could, the AR-15, by the way, the AR-15 is just one of many assault rifles. And all this means it's just cosmetics. It's just how the gun looks. It's black. It's scary looking. It's got some cool plastic pieces on it. That's it. It's functionally the same thing as a hunting rifle. It is. I'm sorry. So anyway, any semi-automatic rifle, for the most part, I don't want to get too technical, but they all function roughly the same. But, you know, maybe what we could just – we could – if we just called the AR-15 the undocumented 15, then maybe we could get the liberals to give it sanctuary, you know, and just let it hang out. Oh, by the way, yeah, that's better. Maybe just the AR-15 needs to identify as a super soaker. Well – well, listen, if I can suddenly declare myself a black woman. He's trans. We're going to have that, by the way. That's the next thing. Remind me of this. This right here, this is fortune telling. This is prognostication gold. We are going to have trans. Would that be trans squared? I don't know. You're going to have layers of transitioning. I'm a man. I'm a human man, but now I'm a female rock. You know, that's going to be how we identify ourselves. So it's really funny. The libs are all about changing immutable characteristics when it comes to gender constructs. But when it comes to they're suddenly super knowledgeable about every category of gun and what's good and what's not good. I mean, it's almost like a sorting line somewhere. I don't get it. It's all nonsense. And I'm enjoying, by the way, I am enjoying the hate that the NRA is getting. And I'm loving it because, by the way, I think they've got the wrong boogeyman. The NRA does a lot. School shootings, folks, school shootings, mass shootings, fraction of deaths when you consider all the handgun deaths out there. The NRA has always supported lawful gun ownership, responsible gun ownership. And there's two things that the NRA has done historically. One, they've pushed for background checks. They've pushed for a nationalized system and were the ones to get it done. Okay. They got behind legislators to get it done. You can't dispute that. But the other thing, they are the leaders, the absolute leaders on gun safety. And I realize maybe you live in a city and you've never handled a gun, blah, blah, blah. But trust me, across America, I don't know how many young people have been saved from stupidly shooting themselves in the head, with a loaded gun on accident because they've attended an NRA safety course because they've been trained. I hate this. So with that being said, and the NRA being made out to be the boogeyman and all this, I'm liking all these corporations that are distancing themselves from the NRA. And one of the best ones was Delta. And I'm going to just when we come back, I'm going to tell you what happened there and how that's going to play out. Very interesting stuff. So don't go anywhere. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
The NRA under fire and a number of companies getting distancing themselves from the NRA. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation. Let me tell you, what they're doing, basically, they're saying they used to would give a discount to NRA members and they're taking away that discount. And it's meaningless, stupid virtue signaling. And it's a losing fight, as demonstrated upon the poor, unfortunate souls that run Delta Airlines. Delta, if you know this, their big hub is in Atlanta. That is the center of worldwide operations for Delta Airlines. And if you've ever flown Delta internationally and flying over in that direction towards Europe, you know this. You know that there's usually a stop in your future in Atlanta. And so the Georgia lawmakers, my guess is every one of them has a gun. I mean, I'd be surprised if there are five people in the Georgia House and Senate that don't own a firearm. Is that fair? Robbie, you live there. Are my suspicions likely true? Okay. He's nodding. And he's not nodding off for a change, so that's good. All right. With that said, they reacted, these NRA members that were like, what the hell, Delta? What are you pissing on us legal gun owners? Don't do that. And guess what? They canceled Delta's fuel subsidies because as part of a sweetheart deal to be in the state, they were getting state fuel subsidies. I think they were in the form of tax breaks, right, on the fuel. Well, if you operate an airline, I'm going to tell you your number one variable that can decide whether you are making money or losing money is fuel. If you run an airline, literally the cost of jet fuel is your bete noire, okay? It's what keeps you up at night. Absolutely. Because an uptick in a few cents a gallon, how much fuel do you think Delta burns in a day? And of that fuel that they burn in a day, how much of it is being put into airplanes in Georgia? I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to be an insane amount. So this translates into, hundreds of millions of dollars in losses potentially. Yeah, I think Delta right now is wishing they never touched this. And this is, by the way, this takes me to an important point. I think these businesses are free to do whatever they want, but they also have to deal with the repercussions of it. So I'm looking at these companies who've taken a vocal stand on the NRA, and I'm looking at it, and I'm an NRA member, and I'm not gonna if I can avoid doing business with them. I'm going to avoid doing business with them because they're essentially talking down to me. I'm an NRA member. I'm not okay with what happened in Parkland. I'm a responsible gun owner. So I'm not, you know, I think that this is just, this is loads of crap here. Loads of crap. And I love it. I love that Georgia did something about it. Oh, this ties in also. Yeah, Dick's Sporting Good, right? So Dick's goes on to they're the, I think they were the first ones. They sell rifles. Not, I don't think here in California. They've got Field and Stream is their other store that they have. They don't sell, I don't think they sell guns here in California, but they, do they? Yeah. Walmart sells. Yeah, okay. All right, well, yeah, other places. Well, no, but Dick's does too. And it was Dick's, it's Walmart, Kroger was the other store. There's a series of businesses that have come out and said, we're going to do our own gun control. And these companies are saying, look, well, you've got to be 21 to buy a gun and some whatever, some other restrictions. And people are asking me, well, Sam, what do you think about that? This is gun control. This is terrible. And I'm hearing things being asked and pundits are asking, you know, well, if this business is doing it, they're taking the lead. Isn't this brilliant? Congress should follow. And my point is these businesses are free to decide who they don't sell to. That's easy. They can choose to refuse service to anybody. But you hypocrites, you stupid hypocrites in the left-wing media, explain this to me. Why are you celebrating Dick's for choosing to not sell to a gun to a 20-year-old, who, by the way, can go join the military and die for his country? That's okay. No problem. He can do that at 17, but can't buy a gun from Dick's until he's 21. But then want to tell a Baker couple that they can't buy. You can't discriminate against a gay couple. You can't put on, you have, if they tell you to draw a giant sugared schwanz on a cake, that you have to do that. Hey, it's simple. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Yeah, private censorship, too. Private censorship falls into this argument, too. I mean, the private business can do what it wants, essentially. In my view, I'm a laissez-faire guy. I don't like government getting involved with businesses and telling them what to do and what not to do. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're listening. You don't want to miss this. So I'm talking about Dick's and other stores that are refusing to sell guns to people who are under 21. Fine. I'm telling you, it's a private business making a private decision of who not to sell a gun to. They'll lose out on the revenue. It's their choice. Government doing it is a different matter. So people have been asking me about this Google YouTube mess because InfoWars, you know, crazy Alex Jones who's saying that this kid, David Hogg, the 17-year-old from Florida, who was a survivor of the shooting, has become sort of spokesperson for survivors and is getting a lot of attention, especially in the left-wing media. He went out and said that he was a crisis actor, and he did this on his YouTube. I do not watch Alex Jones. It's unwatchable. I don't know. Maybe I don't want to offend you. It's just not watchable. And he's nuts. He's just nuts. So, but you know how many subscribers he has on YouTube? I just checked this earlier today, like over 2.2 million. So there's a lot of people who like watching nutty people say nutty things. 2.2 million of them. YouTube is basically about to shut his account down. There's some strike system. It's not very transparent, blah, blah, blah. They're going to shut him down. I think that's where this thing is headed. And it fascinates me because I'll tell you, I'm torn about this. Number one, generally speaking, a private business can refuse to do business with whomever it wants, as long as they're not discriminating on the basis of race, color, you know, creed, or, you know, national origin, gender, et cetera, protected categories. And this applies to internet service companies. It applies to websites and the like. So that's, you got that sitting. That's kind of step one of the analysis. And I'm all about companies being able to do whatever they want. Now, step two is, now, is there a business relationship? Right now, there's an interesting argument here. I don't know what he's making. It's not really transparent to me, and I don't have a YouTube presence, so I can't tell you exactly what kind of revenue is coming from 2.2 million subscribers. I guess it'll come down to how many views there are. It's not a subscriber number, it's views. My guess is that there's a significant amount of revenue being obtained on a monthly basis from these videos. In other words, for InfoWars, their YouTube presence is, it's there, and they're making money off of it. And if they get shut down, my understanding of how it works, because there's another guy named Carl Benjamin, he goes by Sargon of Akkad. I don't know if you know who, anyways, but he got shut down recently, and they took all his money. Now, I'm guessing that in their end user agreement, you know, that you never read because it's 20 million pages long, you just click, I agree. There's something in there where, yeah, we can arbitrarily come in and take away your money and shut you down. But I think that if there's big enough money involved, I think there, a clever lawyer is going to find a way to fight Google. And the last argument here is, why is Google involved in this type of regulation at all? If I was Google and they own YouTube, if I was this company, I would look at it and I go, I got a guy who's unhinged, but he's got 2.2 million subscribers. And it's not like he's advocating jihad, okay? It's not like he is teaching people how to build a suicide belt. I mean, he just thinks that this kid's a crisis actor and he's a nut. You begin to whitewash, you begin to eradicate any controversial content based on your own idea of right and wrong, of true and untrue. And you end up with a product that is so sanitized that nobody cares. Nobody's on it. And YouTube eventually becomes irrelevant. Okay, so that's it. We are out of time. I promise. If trade is still an issue next week, I'm going to get to it. I promise. I'm so sorry. We ran out. So much to cover. So much fun. All right. Have a wonderful weekend. Great to be here. And I will see you all a week from now. Sam Rachofsky, Sam Nation, over and out. People, keep on learning.